Hey, you, are you successful? Think about it. What the hell does it even mean? So we're going to pull, prod, and poke what success actually means by talking to people who've achieved it. It's Success the Podcast, available where you get your podcasts.
And now on Nights with Steve Price, it's time for Health Matters. Thanks to Sydney Adventist Hospital. Healthcare, education, research, yours for life.
The SAN has a sensational Centre for Lifestyle Medicine. The boss there is the Associate Professor Ross Grant. We've spoken to him on the program many times. He's put me through my paces a couple of times. We must do that again this year. He's back on the line. Ross, good evening to you.
Good to be here, Steve. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. Yep, healthy and fit. Now, especially after my lap in a Formula One car on the weekend, that really punishes the body, let me tell you.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. How'd the heart rate go?
Especially when you're doing 300K and then slam around a corner. G-forces, they call it, I think, Ross.
Yeah. You might have a few bruises.
I lost a bit of weight doing that. We're going to talk tonight about the very serious issue of dementia. Now, the numbers continue to grow. 425,000 people in Australia live with dementia. 250 Australians develop it every day and are diagnosed. We've got an increasing ageing population. They're all coming through the baby boomer bump. There is a lot of research going on, but there is some confusion, I think, among people about what the difference is between dementia and Alzheimer's. We might clear a few of those things up. So what exactly is Alzheimer's? What does it do to your brain?
Well, Alzheimer's is a type of dementia, so there are a number of different types. Alzheimer's makes up in populations like Australia anywhere between sort of two-thirds and even up to sort of 70% and above. It's a condition where it starts to occur, we think now, probably around about, you know, even in as early as the 40s, but probably the 50s. Certain things are starting to go on. It's a chronic degenerative process where not only do you lose some of those synaptic connections, remember when brains connect to each other, that's what actually helps us to think and feel and learn things and that type of thing. So they start to lose some of those, and then unfortunately, eventually, some of those neurons actually die, so some of those brain cells actually die off. So with Alzheimer's, you end up with a significant reduction in brain cell volume in different parts. Alzheimer's is kind of unique to start off with because it ends up with starting to die off in a type of cells called the cholinergic neurons, in other words, neurons that use acetylcholine as a neurotransmitter. But those ones die off first, and then and it's starting off in places like the hippocampus. And one of the reasons why we know Alzheimer's is linked to memory is because there's a little part in the middle of the brain called the hippocampus, which is quite vulnerable, but it's really important for forming these long-term memories. And so if you're losing neurons there, unfortunately, you're not able to form those memories, and that leads into all of the problems with living with something like an Alzheimer's dementia.
The old enemies, things like excess sugar, fast food, alcohol, lack of sleep, stress, all come together and don't help when somebody's heading into that age bracket in life. A lot of things there that you can do things about. You can limit your fast food intake. You can limit your drinking. You can try and have a stress-free life and a stress-free job if you possibly can and get some decent sleep. And I presume exercise, Ross, because you're always big on that, is something that will also help.
Absolutely, Stephen. And the key thing with this is it is what's called this chronic degenerative. The fact that it takes so long to develop means that we have got time to do something about it. And all of those things that you mentioned, whether or not it's the type of nutrition you're putting in or whether it's the amount of exercise or sleep, all of those have an impact on how healthy our cells are. Now, the brain's pretty protected. It's got this fascinating thing called the blood-brain barrier, so it tends to be pretty protected for a while. But after a while, some of that kind of wears out. And unfortunately, some of those things that you talked about can increase some of the damage going on in the brain. And we get this chronic inflammatory, oxidative stress-type environment. Now, some classic hallmarks of Alzheimer's, they talk about these deposition of these plaques in the brain called beta-amyloid, or what's another one called neurofibrillary tangles that happen inside the neuron itself. While these are classical, they're dependent on the sort of biochemistry to develop around that oxidative inflammatory activity for which lifestyle we know can either stimulate or reduce. So exactly as you've said, there's things that we can do that can help us early on and even once we might start getting some symptoms, which some exciting research out of the US has shown fairly recently.
I know two national sportsmen, and I won't name them for obvious reasons, who going through this battle. I mean, clearly they have been fit and exercised, and even when they finished their individual sports, they continued to remain fit. I don't know what their alcohol consumption or diet is like. They were both in very stressful parts of the sporting world. So does stress overbalance some of those other, what's the worst of those things I mentioned, or is it a combination always?
It's really a combination, and that combination sits on what our genetic background is. And so, you know, we might be vulnerable. You know, you, if you're only getting one or two or three amongst a combination of probably about 15 or so different major hits, then one or two, you're probably going to be okay. By the time you sort of add a bit more, three, four, five. So if you're somebody who doesn't sleep well, tends to overdo the alcohol, unfortunately doesn't have an optimum diet, so has things that have high sugars and high fats. If you're not really stimulating your brain too much or getting involved in positive kind of social engagement, all of these things can start to wear away in different parts of the brain in ways in which we still don't understand, because it's a pretty complex sort of mix of multiple things that are adding together. We know what the final pathology looks like. We know what the brain looks like once it's damaged. We know what some of that biochemistry is like. But how all of these things play together, some of our own work suggests that you probably need about three of them in order to push it down that sort of pathway that biochemistry starts to go into that negative direction. But, you know, and I'm not sure what these sportsmen had, whether or not they were in sports that caused head knocks and a bit of brain trauma and that type of thing. But those have certainly been linked to certainly some of the dementias and Alzheimer's also.
Both involved in sports where there was a bit of head trauma. I'm really interested, Ross, in your comment there about brain stimulus. I mean, is it anecdotal and mythical that if you stay working longer, that you're in a job where you have to think, or if you're retired, that, you know, you tackle a crossword or a game that requires some sort of skill, motor hand-to-foot skill or whatever, that helps?
Yeah, look, I think it's pretty clear now from a number of different angles that keeping the brain active, keeping it active in a way that it needs to be a little bit challenged, doesn't want to be stressed, but keeping it challenged in a way which is going to make it do things. And what that does, it actually stimulates parts of, even just parts of the biochemistry, whether it's nerve growth factor or another one, brain-derived neurotrophic factor. These molecules are actually able then to stimulate nerve growth so they can stimulate making new connections. It keeps the brain into a healthy biochemical state. So there is evidence for it. If you're doing things, you know, some people have been very good at doing certain things all their life, and then they'll keep doing those things and think, I'm still stimulating my brain. Well, not really. You've got to do something which actually gives it a little bit more of a, it forces it to do something a little bit extra. And that might be, it might be learning another language. It might be just visiting someplace new, so that you're actually getting these other stimuli and the brain has to sort of integrate them in sort of these multiple complex ways.
Can you treat it with drugs?
Unfortunately, now there are a couple of drugs that are out there on the market. The acetylcholinesterase have been out there for some time because, as I mentioned, it's the neurons that have the acetylcholine as the main neurotransmitter. So in the same way that sort of Parkinson's is sort of treated symptomatically by increasing the dopamine, because they're dopamine-type neurons that die off in Parkinson's, if it's thought that if we can sort of block the loss of acetylcholine, block its breaking down, we might be able to improve it. And there's very, very minimal benefits in the early phases with that, but it's certainly not slowing the disease. It's certainly not a treatment for the disease. The other major one that came out a few years ago was a drug which targeted what they call NMDA receptors, and they're main excitatory sort of receptors in the brain. So the brain, you know, has too much of that, it seems, what we call excitotoxicity, that plays into that sort of oxidative inflammatory milieu. And so this drug was blocking that and is still there for people who have more advanced Alzheimer's. But again, the improvements are extremely modest, and there doesn't seem to be any drug on the market, certainly no drug on the horizon, that is able to provide any sort of significant arresting, let alone reversal. So from a pharmacological point of view, It's extremely difficult. In fact, one of the major drug companies just put out a release fairly recent, just a month or so ago, to say that they're pulling out of looking for drugs for Alzheimer's and Parkinson's altogether because they're spending a lot of money, but they don't believe that it's actually going to. It won't be successful in the end because we've got a very complex change in the biochemistry, which is being fed through a number of different pathways. So trying to tackle it in just one way or with one drug, with one mechanism, is highly unlikely to work, seems to be the sort of growing consensus, which is why the excitement comes around treating it in a more multimodal way, a bit like trying to fix up an old car. There's no point going in and just putting good petrol in. You'll get a little bit of benefit, but there's problems with the spark plugs and the head and the tyres and all the rest of it. So a little bit like with Alzheimer's, you've really got to target it multiple different ways, multiple different levels, what we call a multimodal approach.
Always a pleasure to catch up, Associate Professor Ross Grant. Thank you very much. Good luck with the SANS Centre for Lifestyle Medicine.
Terrific. Thanks, Steve.
Now your money is truly mobile. Whether you're paying for a wedding in Spain, education fees in the US, or medical procedures in the UK, you can do it all with the OFX Global Money Transfer mobile device app. Keep an eye on exchange rates, view currency charts, set rate alerts, stay up to date with market information, send money securely, track your money, and be notified every step of the way. The smart money's on the smart move with the OFX Global Money Transfer app. Go to OFX.com.